Gerald Celente of the Trends Research Institute joins us today. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Well, you know, the headlines read 29 injured. I'm sure you saw this explosion in New York, another explosion in a New Jersey train. And then this morning we read of bombs seized.
Well, let's look at the New Jersey, New York, the fellow they have in custody, you know, is Afghan. America launched a war against Afghanistan, and we outlined this in the Trends Journal. We took George Bush's speeches of the evening of 9/11 and the one when he addressed the nation 9 days later. Not one fact in it. We said something like only a madman would speak these words and only people dumbstruck with fear would believe them. Not one fact as to why we invaded Afghanistan. And then we saw the 28 pages that were mostly redacted of the 9/11 Commission. What is it, 15 out of the 19 alleged people that struck the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were Saudis? So that makes perfect sense then. Okay, let's invade Afghanistan, launched by far the longest war in American history, based on no facts at all. And again, we outlined everything that was going on at that time, where the Taliban was saying that they would do everything they can not to have war. George Bush, quote, "We don't have time to talk." So now this guy's Afghan. Now, if you lived in Afghanistan, your entire country was destroyed because there was somebody allegedly there hiding, and now you're being occupied by foreign nations, you think you'd become a terrorist? Everybody you love is dead or whatever, or you're seeing what's going on in your country while you're not living there. So what I'm saying is, whether these terror strikes are false flag or real, no one's talking about who caused the atmosphere for terror. How about invading Iraq based on lies? Oh, we just heard Colin Powell when he lied to the American people on TV, holding his little vial as proof that that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda. Now we're hearing from his emails that they hacked, but where was his courage? How come he's not being brought up on war crimes for lying us into war? Whether these terror strikes are false flags or real, they've been using them to get the Americans' minds off the terrible economy, as they did back in 9/11. People forget we were in a recession. What got us out of it was Alan Green's scam, lowered interest rates to 46-year lows, and created the real estate bubble and the financial bubble. And they can't, and the other thing, too, is look at the study that came out last week out of the UK that showed what a fraud the Libyan war was and how they were lied into it. And look at the chaos that's created. So when you look at what's going on around the world and you look at America's track record at starting wars based on lies, I'm old enough of Vietnam War era, and there was no Gulf of Tonkin incident the way they said it happened. It was an outright lie. And just as Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda, and it made perfect sense to invade Afghanistan because Osama bin Laden, a Saudi, was hanging out there. So if you're going to keep bombing these countries into oblivion, killing millions of people, you're going to have terrorist strikes, whether they're false flag or real.
Fascinating story just hit the headlines a few days ago. The change in technology and the impact it's had on society. Now, you on Trends Journal really do a great job bringing the latest technological developments and the trends and themes and biases that we see there and the importance to keep our hand on it. But some people are concerned, Gerald, that maybe technology might be getting a bit ahead of us.
We're going out of the industrial age. And so it's from industrialization into robotization, and that's basically what we're looking at. And we're going to be losing more and more of those jobs, just like with industrialization. You know, it took people out of their homes that were making things and put them into a centralized location. The initial impacts are going to hit society hard, but something new will develop after that. So, for example, start looking for a whole new education system. You know, you're seeing interactive, artificial intelligence and virtual reality. So now you're going to have virtual reality classrooms, because what happens is you're looking at new generations that are being born into this, infants. You know, you see them, the little kids. Everybody's addicted to these things. As soon as they reach an age, they have their world in their hands.
No, you've got it. You know, our three-year-old Gerald is already interacting verbally with an Alexa Echo from Amazon and controlling the internet for music.
So now it becomes a whole new world for them. So now you're going to start seeing new developments. Again, talking about education. This is an industrial age model to put people in centralized locations. You know, they took them off the farms and whatever else they were doing, and to teach them how to read, write, do a little bit of arithmetic, and follow orders. Now we're out of the industrial age, but we're still using an industrial age outmoded system. And when I say the education system's outmoded, look at America's education system. It's one of the most expensive in the world, and we don't even win, place, or show compared to many other nations. We're antiquated, and if our education system was working, do you think the nation would be in the problems that we have today? So what I'm saying is, yes, you're right, but there's another side to this. The other part of it is that we see as a real danger of such is that robotization will take over humanization, in the sense that, you know, people ask Siri how it should be done. So there, think for yourself is an old line that we used to use, but people aren't doing it anymore. They're letting the internet and the digital world think for them. So there's going to be pluses and minuses, and there's going to be a lot of breakthroughs, too, in a very positive way. So when you look at artificial intelligence, you know, we're looking at it as whether it's medicine or biogenetics, whatever it might be, that are going to work toward helping, you know, people with Alzheimer's, and they don't work, start looking for artificial intelligence to make it work. So we're doing a lot, and same thing with vision. You know, if it doesn't happen with, you know, the medical end, start looking for the artificial end. We have an aging population worldwide, so you're going to start seeing more and more technologies advance in a positive way to help society as they age and move into different directions.
We don't want to vilify technology. This Alexa Echo, I mean, imagine how that can help folks with, as you mentioned, Alzheimer's, or folks with Asperger's syndrome, or someone else on that spectrum, and other folks who just don't have that interaction that is affordable, becoming very affordable, I think, for the typical household. And that's just one tiny little aspect of artificial intelligence, really an expert system, but artificial intelligence. So I think you make a great point, meaning that we've got to embrace it, but we've got to be careful with it. And we have to think this through carefully. But don't you agree, though, that another culprit here plaguing the U.S., 1 in 5 Americans have less than $100 in savings?
Well, again, look at the jobs that are being created. You know, you look at the data. I mean, you know, we went from manufacturing jobs to health services and retail and hospitality sector that don't pay living wages. I mean, what are we're subsidizing the people that work in Walmarts and these other places, because they don't earn enough. So, and then you look at the costs of living, these CPI numbers are a lot of baloney. And so they're not real numbers. Inflation's much higher than they report. And then you look at, okay, people are going into debt. They're certainly not buying homes, because home ownership now is back to 1960s levels. And the millennials are living at home. There's about a third of them in that age bracket. And that age group owns less homes at that age bracket than in modern times. So the debt levels are real. And then you talked about savings. Oh, where are you going to put your money? You're not going to put it in the bank, because you're not going to get anything back on it. So that's why you also have no savings. There's no place to put it. You have to gamble in the markets. And when you look at the people that are in the market, it's only about 10% of Americans that really, you know, profit from the equity markets. So it's a double-sided sword. One, in that income levels stink, and you're looking at median household income below 1999 levels. And the other part is, where do you put your savings? You don't put it in the bank and get it any interest rates on them, with near zero interest rate policy and negative interest rate policy in other nations.
perfect segue into another discussion, and that is, where do you put your savings? And of course, the place where folks were glad they put their savings, at least this year in 2016, the precious metals. I mean, we've seen gold and silver move sharply higher while stocks lagged for a while. Now we're backing and filling, and there's some volatility entering the markets. Do you like the precious metals on a forward basis? It certainly looks like we may have the worst behind us and perhaps a new bull market develop.
We're forecasting, and you know I've said this on your show, I don't know how many times, gold has to go over $1,400 an ounce. And then we believe it's going to be the beginning of the gold bull run. We had said that gold would bottom out at around $1,150. We nailed it. And now, to us, as you mentioned, what, gold is up about 26% on the year. So if you invested in gold this year, or silver, which is up even more, you made good investments. Going back to negative interest rates, zero interest rate policy, and stimulus and helicopter money, to me, why would I want to own digital money backed by nothing and producing, you know, nothing? So that's why I'm bullish on gold and precious metals. And then put on top of that the geopolitical unrest.
Yes, indeed. There's always that excellent insurance policy that we all need in our portfolios. Well, as we wrap up today, I bet I've missed a couple of topics or news events.
Well, again, talking about the geopolitical events and tying it all together, all things are connected. Look at oil prices. They're down around $46, $47 a barrel. Saudi Arabia, for example, needs $100 a barrel to break even. I'm mentioning Saudi Arabia because they're waging a war against the innocent people in Yemen, killed, you know, well over 15,000 of them already, destroyed the poorest nation in the Middle East, because when all else fails, as I say, they take you to war. It's failing in the Middle East. The war drums keep beating louder. And we were very concerned about an explosion over there, whether it comes from Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, whether it's happening in Libya, another blowout in Iraq. So what I'm saying is the geopolitical aspects turned on to and on top of the populist movements going on throughout Europe with it destabilizing the governments, plus economic downturns. You're looking at GDP growth in America, what, at 1%? Less than that in Europe. Only, what, 1.2% in Hong Kong. It's a global slowdown. We're looking at conditions very volatile now. And again, that's why we're bullish on gold as a safe haven asset.
Please tell people more about the Trends Journal.
Well, we have the Trends Journal, which, of course, is a quarterly, 54 pages, full color, either magazine or digital, a very high-quality magazine. Of course, we Trends Monthly, Trend Alerts each week, and Trends in the News broadcasts every Monday through Friday, only $99 a year. And we know that people are having a difficult time, so we have a discount request page because we want to provide history before it happens for everyone so they can seize the opportunities and avoid the dangers.
Gerald Celente, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus Plus, their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Ariba, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.